Welcome back to We Still Like Each Other, the podcast. I'm Travis.
And I'm Stephanie.
And this is the podcast where we show that the honeymoon stage can last forever and ever.
You messed it up.
Oh, shit.
You're supposed to say forever, and I say...
Ever.
Look at you stealing my lines.
It's been a while.
Happy anniversary, babe.
Happy anniversary.
8 years.
Eight long, beautiful years.
Feels like it's been 8 years since we did a podcast.
It does. What's going on?
A lot. And yeah. A little at the same time.
It feels like a little because it's the same things happening over and over. So, what's been going on?
New baby. We're a family of five.
Crazy.
How does it feel? Biggest change.
I think at this stage, it's just, you know, it's just nonstop for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
There's just always something that has to be done. And if there isn't, that means we're purposely not doing it.
Yeah.
You know, like
we're avoiding something.
Yeah, like we know we have to go do X, Y, and Z, but we're having this moment for ourselves. So
we're going to self-sabotage and then complain about it later.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just always something.
But I feel like that's always true, right? Like when we had one kid, it was other things taking up our time. When we had two kids, it's go, go, go. I feel like no matter what, it's always go.
Yeah.
Not to minimize like what a child adds to your plate, but we're just doing a lot in a different way.
I say the biggest change is probably just the sleep. You're feeling it more, but you know, I still have my moments.
Yeah.
I think like last night you got me up twice. You're like, mm-hmm. I need wipes.
I didn't have water.
I need water to drink.
Yeah. So I am nursing her, and breastfeeding obviously dehydrates you. And I was like, no, I need my water. Like I can't like just sit here and nurse her without water. I felt like I was sucking on cotton.
Yeah. I don't know. What about for you? What's the biggest difference?
I guess having two kids that are fairly young at the same time.
Yeah. I don't know how I skipped over that.
Because Eli and River have an 8-year difference, and he had a lot more independence. Also, when River was a newborn, Eli was in school. He was in public school. So he would go to school for 6 hours a day. And I was home with a newborn. Now we're all home all the time. And a toddler needs a lot more attention than an 8-year-old needed when I had River. You know what I mean? So, you know, diaper duty, trying to understand someone's needs who can't really communicate them.
Yeah.
So it's a lot.
Yeah. I think today I was like, River was having a tantrum. So I don't know. Is tantrum the right word?
Yeah, it's the word. You know, like when toddlers are deregulated, I guess. Dysregulated. I don't know what the word is.
But also on top of that, Santi was crying.
Mm.
And I'm just like taking a step back and looking at everything. I'm like, yo, mm-hmm. Got two of these motherfuckers crying right now.
Yeah.
And can't do shit about it. Well, I mean, yeah, for the most part.
And I felt like you had a moment where you felt like helpless and like you wanted to do something to control the tantrum or control what was happening. And I remember having to tell you, like, it's okay. Like, he's going to get through it. We got to give him a second.
And Eli had plenty of tantrums.
Mm-hmm.
And
but I used to try to control them more. I feel like I learned a lot from Eli's tantrums. You know, like, I definitely was more like, he needs to stop crying. He needs to sit here. He needs to move here. Like, it took literally battling with Eli and then obviously, thankfully, learning more later on to realize, like, those are all normal toddler things. And we're better parents for it now.
Yeah. So, it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
I figure we have a few things we need to catch the people up on.
Like what?
Let me try and start in order.
Well, just what are the things we're going to talk about? That's what I meant.
I'm going to talk about some content we've seen out in social media in regards to relationships and marriage.
Are we going to talk about Love is Blind at all?
Oh, yeah.
A little.
Right? Yeah, we could talk about it. We're going to talk about our birth story. Are we? Do you want to talk about it?
Santi's. Yeah, my birth story. No.
Our birthing story?
I just wasn't sure what you meant. I'm like, wait, what? When we were born? Like,
you know, we're pregnant. Damn. Cancel Stephanie. We got some new furniture that we're both pretty excited about.
And that sounds like it's something that it's not.
We got a sex chair.
Set your expectations low.
We got a sex chair.
No, we did not.
And we're going to talk about our anniversary.
Right.
So let's start with the new furniture.
Yeah, because you making it seem like we're about to just brag about like redecorating our house.
Let me tell you about this leather. No. Okay, so a little backstory. Mm-hmm. When we lived in the city or in the Bronx, Steph and I would take trips to New York City pretty frequently and just get a room for the night. Mm-hmm. And most of it had to do with just getting away from, you know, regular life. But the biggest thing was getting to sleep in a king size bed. Yeah.
And by regularly, we mean like a couple times a year.
But
you made it seem like
more than
the
average person, like who lives in the same city, like people.
It's weird that we're from the city and we would get a hotel in the city.
Like it was like we were sneaking around, like we were like secret lovers.
Like we were, I was the mistress. Ooh, that probably added some like.
We never did.
Fun to it.
We should have role played. But yeah, we just, you know, always loved how king size beds feel. We literally cuddled for like maybe 2 seconds and then we're both on the other side.
Yeah, it felt really nice. But it felt good, but like not in a way that we wanted it forever. Like we liked our queen size bed and like being close to each other.
And also, to be honest, it would have overpowered any bedroom we had at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or our living space. So now that we're in Jersey, Steph kind of brought up the idea of getting a king size bed like right before Santi was born. And I don't know, we just said, fuck it, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we went shopping for one and we almost walked out with a really bad one. We almost got like the extra firm one.
Yeah, we got a firm one.
So we ended up getting firm and I've been happy with it.
Yeah. I think the whole reason this was like even brought up, like why are we telling our listeners about getting a new bed, but I think it was like a symbolic change like in our relationship, because we also got the queen bed that we got on a super like budget at Bob's Furniture. It wasn't the best quality mattress and we had it basically like our whole marriage so far. And like being able to get something new for us, like, I don't know, that felt like a big step. Like it was like, wow. Or the fact that we went through a mattress, like mattresses are supposed to last like a long time. And for us to have had the same mattress for 8 years and now we're getting a new one, it was like a reminder of like, shit, we've been in this for a little minute.
Yeah. Also, take care of your backs. And if you've had a mattress for over 5 years, just consider but getting
really,
a new one.
Really good mattresses could last longer, like 10 years.
Yeah, but I think the fact that we had a Bob's mattress and we had it for 8 years, we were doing ourselves a disservice by sleeping on it.
Yeah.
I mean, right. But honestly, it held us down and I'm grateful for it, but I am loving the king size bed.
Yeah.
The first night we slept on it, I thought you were upset with me. Because you were so far.
But you know what's funny? You sleep all the way on the edge. Sometimes I have to like call you closer.
You know what it is? Sometimes I know you bring Santi in the bed, like for, you know, just to feed for a few. And I get nervous. So yeah. I think I'm just always on alert, even when she's not in the bed.
Yeah. But I'm like, can you get closer, please? Because then if I try to get closer to you, I feel like you're going to fall off the bed.
Yeah, literally right on the edge.
So yeah, 8 years, we've been in this for a minute. Yeah. How do you feel about that? How does year 8 feel?
You know, I think the biggest thing about year 8 is obviously we're going into it with a newborn.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little different, but
so we're not going into year 8. We did 8 years already. You oh, get shit. It? When yeah, you count it.
So we're going into year nine.
We're going into year nine. So that's let's talk about year eight first.
So year eight was basically taken over by our pregnancy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I enjoyed this pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like we had a lot of fun and you got to relax, much needed rest when you needed to.
Mm-hmm.
Probably cooked a little bit more than I ever have.
You cooked a little more than you ever have?
Yeah. So I'm not like bussing out meals every night, but.
I feel like that's now, though. That's like very recent. That's not encompassing year eight of our marriage.
Okay, so maybe I'm thinking about the later half.
You're thinking about the later 2 months now being on paternity leave? Don't be lying to these people.
I'm not lying. I'm not lying about cooking.
But only recently, and it's not year eight of our marriage.
Mm.
I feel like maybe that could be something that like it shows that sometimes you revisit the kinks in a marriage, even in year eight, and then there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay. I don't know what I could say about year eight. I mean, I've been happy. Yeah. How do you feel about year eight? I'm failing at this.
Not that, I don't know. I think you're focusing on like little moments. And I also think the confusion of like, this is year eight starting, but it's not. It's year nine starting. It's just weird the way we count numbers and ages. I think year eight, the bigger things are like homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
That played a big part in our marriage. The battles that we did have, like, yes, cooking more is important, but we have to be real and say we spent a lot of year eight still fighting about it. And now it's like getting better towards the end.
That's true.
I think year eight, I had a lot of self like reflecting and figuring out like what's important to me, what I value. People who've listened to the podcast, like I was doing a lot more reading that I hadn't done in years. So just gaining more knowledge of self, because a lot of the things I read were like, you know, self-help books.
And
digging into my brain.
On that topic, like, you know, looking back, I am appreciative of all the work that you've been putting into yourself, because it's been showing up in our marriage, just in terms of how we communicate, how, you know, certain actions that you may have done prior to maybe reading a certain chapter. That, so yeah, I am appreciative of, I guess year eight was I guess you could call it an evolution of Stephanie.
Yeah. And I will say, something I've been thinking about is that although, yes, I've been doing the work, it's not perfect, right? It's not like a switch turned off or on. Like, I'm still imperfect, right? So I know I have had moments still that maybe I'm not really proud of, or I have a moment that sounds very, like, hypocritical or, like, ain't you doing the work, bitch? And you never, like, throw that in my face.
I definitely think it. I'll be honest. You know, I can't think of like one particular, what do we used to call them? Discussion.
Uh-huh.
I can't think of one particular one, but there's definitely times where I stepped away like, she would never give that advice to anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet here she goes like,
yeah, losing my shit.
She's not living her reps. But in your defense, I feel like you come to pretty quickly.
Yeah, I reel it back in.
So, you know, and you're not, it's not, you definitely know how to apologize.
Mm-hmm. I think what many people feel that, you know, we've talked about how some people say like, this is just who I am and I can't change. I think maybe they have had moments where they try to evolve, but they realize how hard it is because our behaviors become like hardwired. Like literally, like our brains create pathways of like, this action is easy. So even though you have the intention to do better, sometimes it's not the automatic response. And what many of us struggle with is acknowledging that and apologizing. We want to be wrong and strong. We make a mistake and now we got to defend it instead of apologizing. So I think that's what I'm proud of myself for that. That like, when my brain's like, do this shit that you don't want to do, right? This behavior that you're trying to avoid, and I do it, I could be like, shit, there it goes. And I could apologize or, you know, just reroute where shit went.
Yeah, I think the most impressive thing about all that is that I'd say if we've had 10 discussions this year,
mm-hmm.
9 out of those 10 mm-hmm. were you coming to that conclusion yourself mm-hmm. rather than me having to like pull it out of you. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, that's pretty big that you had moments to reflect and mm-hmm. you're like, listen, I fucked up. Mm-hmm. Even though maybe you fucked up, I fucked up in how I reacted yeah. to your fuck up.
Yeah, because let's be clear. I'm not just bugging out or like, it's not like I'm just starting problems with you.
My coffee's too sweet.
No, it's more so like if we're already having some sort of discussion, or if I feel that maybe you let me down in some way,
yeah,
then my reaction isn't always the way that I want to react. It's not me just losing my shit for no reason. 10:04 p.m. What was that? You clicked your watch.
Yeah.
So now they know what time we recorded this. But yeah.
Let's see what else we got. Well, I guess we're still on our anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
8 years of marriage going into year 9.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw myself married.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's the, you know, it's a big part of my identity now. I don't see us not being married. Obviously, mm-hmm. I know it's not like, I'm not going to be on some toxic shit like we ain't never getting divorced.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel that I'm capable of putting in the work to make sure that we last, mm-hmm. we go the distance. I don't take for granted that being married for 8 years is a big deal. You know, we know people that have been married and have separated.
Mm-hmm.
I am a product of divorce. Like I have no memories of my parents together. And I don't think either of us are like going to just stay married for the sake of having that achievement.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's pretty amazing that not only are we married, but we still like each other. And it's not without its hard work,
mm-hmm.
but you're my girl and
I'm your woman.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. You know, I know plenty of people who don't have companionship
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't want that lifestyle. Even when there's moments where I'm like, damn, I wish I could just have my old ways of doing what I want to do.
And how so?
Just not, you know, no kids or not having to report to anyone or
not your womanizer ways.
Not that, not the womanizer.
You gotta clarify.
When I take a step back and look at the way my life is now, I have no regrets.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Going into year 9, you know, there are things that I obviously want to do differently, but more so just for the improvement of us as a unit. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited just to say we've been married 10 years.
Yeah. In my head, I'm like, year 10 seems like such a big milestone and I want to celebrate it. Like I want to do something, mm-hmm. but I'm trying not to get ahead of myself. I'm like, that's 2 years from now. I have so many other things to stress. But speaking of, you said you want to do the work. And Ashley sent us this TikTok. And I think that...
Shout out to the Lintons.
Yeah. Wait, hold on. Let me just say something, because... Can you look at me?
Yeah.
Okay. You're like looking sideways. And I was about to start talking, but like you weren't looking at me.
Okay, go.
And mind you, when we started this, he goes, can you sit this way so that you're looking at me? And now you're like.
So let me give you a little.
Insight on where your head is.
Behind the scenes.
Okay.
This episode is coming out without any visuals.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too much of a headache to try and get a camera going. So we're sitting at my desk with some mics, and it's not the most ideal for podcasting, but it's just, you know, it's where it is right
now. But I need you to like still look at me so that conversation flows more naturally for me.
She wants to lock eyes.
You too. You told me to sit, angle myself to look at you.
All right, let's get back on track. Shout out to the Lintons.
See, we're still doing the work.
Ashley sent us a TikTok.
Yeah, she sent us a TikTok, and someone was like, can you stitch this video and tell us what you mean by marriage is hard? And then someone stitched it and shared part of her vows. I just took a couple notes on the meat of it. And her partner wrote vows for her and talked about, you know, when I met you, I didn't say, okay, you checked all these boxes, she's it. We were just drawn to each other, thankfully. But then we had to do the work on a daily. But not work like the way we hate work in capitalism, right? Like my 9 to 5, where I gotta clock in, I gotta have this commute that I hate. But more so work like doing something you're passionate about, like a artist and its paintings, right? Like work that feels essential and important and that you love. And that made me think, like, when we talk about marriage is hard, it's like we want to be realistic, right, as married couples. But I think we need to change our language and, like, the way we discuss the work and what hard means. Something else that he said in his vows was loving well is... a thing you do is not a lottery that you win. And what I instantly thought about is some things I've been reading in the book All About Love by Bell Hooks. And it's that love is a verb, is an action. It's something you have to do actively, right? It's not like you fall in love, like if you're just helpless and it's just gonna happen, right? Or if you find the right person, you did it. You found love. Because if that was the case, no one would fall out of love. No one would get divorced if they didn't keep doing the thing. The last point, so after his vows, she said something that was really insightful, was it's not that marriage is hard, it's just life is hard. Whether you're single or you're married or you're polygamous or no matter what, life is hard. It's going to have its ups and downs. So if you're doing it with someone constantly, there's going to be moments where it feels like that person is the cause of it. Or if they did something differently, this hard thing wouldn't be as hard. Or we set these expectations like your partner's supposed to just make life easy. So it's not that marriage is hard. It's just you're both doing life together.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. I think when I think of doing life and the times where sometimes our marriage does get hard, that moment, although in the moment it feels like, yo, this sucks, because let's be honest, at least for me, I'll say it, my mood is usually dependent on how well we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're vibing, we're communicating, we're having a great sex life.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to show up in how I present myself to the world.
Yeah.
But if we're having an argument, or maybe we're on a dry spell, whatever, I'm not going to be the best version of myself. So with that being said, you know, I'm grateful that those moments don't last long. Mm-hmm. Although in the moment,
yeah,
it might as well have been a month.
You know why I think we bounce back? Is because we're human, right? So we're going to be impacted by life and the things that are going on. But I think when we bounce back is when we realize that the issue usually isn't like it's not an issue between us. It's like we have to attack the issue.
Mm.
And we need to be good together to attack the issue, right? Like if we're at each other's throats, the issue's never going to get resolved. Right. Like we have to team up on whatever it is that's that thing that's making marriage hard right now. And I feel like there's been moments where I'm like frustrated or like, oh, how are we going to get through this? And I always come to the conclusion like we have to get through it together. And if at the end of this problem being solved, we want to be together, why don't we just solve it together and be kind of, I don't want to say nice to each other, but not be assholes to each other in the process, you know? Like sometimes they're like, well, maybe I'll be happy after this problem is solved. I feel like sometimes even in the worst of our issues, right? Like I might feel that way initially, but then it's always like, no, I'd rather just solve it with you. Let's do this together.
Yeah.
Why be salty for the next couple of weeks?
Yeah. And I'm grateful for that. And there's, you know, a lot about my personality being
mm-hmm.
very chill,
mm-hmm.
too
mm-hmm.
chill. And
yeah.
I don't have it in me to like be really upset at you.
Yeah.
You can make the argument that, hey, I don't do anything that brings you there. But I just, to your point, like, I just see, like, life can be short sometimes. Yeah. Like, although we hope that we live a long, healthy life, mm-hmm. you never know.
Yeah. I
go out the house tomorrow and then not come back.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would break you if you knew that I left the house and mm-hmm. we were, like, barely talking.
Yeah. You know what's something else about life is short that I want to bring up now? Even if we live to 100, right? Our kids are only with us for a much shorter time.
Mm.
And I want to set a good example for them of what healthy love looks like. Even if it's not marriage. Like, I don't think marriage is like an indicator that you did life right, mm. you know? But still, love and relationships, whether they're romantic or not, I want to show our kids what like true love is, right? Respect, honor. And again, when I say true love, I don't mean just romantic. I want them to say like my parents loved me, you know? We have had conversations about sometimes like, is it love or is it duty and obligation? And I want our kids to say like my parents loved each other. And now Eli just turned 10. It shows how quickly time flies. Like we've been married for 8 years. So in another 8, we'll have an adult. And now our time is significantly shorter for him to say like, this is what love should look like.
That's crazy.
Like, you know,
him being in another 8 years, he'll be an adult. Yeah. I'm still like wrapping my head around having a daughter. Yeah, I hope that that's how our kids feel about us.
Yeah. And honestly, like, you know, they say, oh, you know, whether it's a boy or a girl, like you love them all the same and you have to instill all the same things. But I've evolved as a person, right? So, of course, I'm going to evolve as a mother throughout these years. And now having a daughter, I feel that pressure even more about like, her feeling, first of all, self-love, like her self-esteem being through the roof, like fuck all that being small shit, like no. And then her seeing our relationship, like to me, that's lit a fire under me even more. You know, people were like, well, you have sons, your sons should see it. Yes. And I did my best with what I knew at the time and with the experiences I had. But I know that things will change and I'm going to even be more hyper aware of it now with the daughter.
Yeah, I know that, you know, on the topic of having a daughter, I know there's only so much I can protect her from.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope that I instill the qualities that make her a strong, self-loving, independent woman that, although it may be unavoidable to come across, you know, people that don't deserve her energy, I just hope that I equip her with the skills to be able to maneuver through those things.
To, like, know how to set her boundaries, set her boundaries, standards high.
And like I said, like, it may be unavoidable, but maybe once she does find herself in it, she can acknowledge it and, you know, maneuver through it in a way that, you know, I would hope she could.
Yeah.
You know, I have been pretty vocal about not always making the best decisions when it comes to women and how I treat them. And it's funny to say, but like, when she was first born, like, I was nervous, like, oh my God, I've never changed a vagina. Like, I don't know how to do the diaper. Like, I know up the penis, clean the balls, the butt, whatever. And it's like, taking care of your daughter in that way, it's like, wow, like, I've encountered other women who this was someone's daughter at some point. And, you know, whatever, those things had to happen for me to be who I am now.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, it's like, damn, I wish I had this awakening back then, because, you know, maybe I could have avoided some pain.
This is another thing with parenthood and marriage and evolving growth, is that you can't change the past and your actions, but in the way we treat each other, it's going to influence our sons from how they treat their partners in the future. And is going to influence our daughter from what she would accept from her partner in the future. Like, you know what I mean?
It's crazy, because
that's the way you that's the way you fix those wrongs, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll just be holding her and I'm looking at her and I'm like thinking about what her life is going to be like. And I don't know, I start thinking about all these crazy scenarios. And
Don't go down those rabbit holes.
I know. But yeah, it's just, I never held River and thought about those things. I don't worry about Eli in that way. So it's very interesting that my mind is going those places. I guess, you know, I'm very aware of the world. And
yeah, you gotta be careful though, right? Because I feel like sometimes if you allow that worry to consume you, it could lead to, like, controlling behavior.
Yeah.
And then that's something she will pick up on, our sons will pick up on, you know, like, you know, we always cringe when people make comments about, like, our sons keeping our daughter in the house, or, like, I get where people say those things, and I know there's no ill intent, but it makes me cringe, because it's like, no. that's not how we're raising them. But if you allow those intrusive thoughts about the future and how can you protect her and what can you do, you could unintentionally exhibit some controlling behavior.
Yeah. And I think one of my biggest strengths is that I'm willing to change. I'm not, let's say I do fall down that path, I think I can easily come out of it with a conversation. Like, I'm not just so stuck in my ways and, like, it's my way or the highway.
And I think just actively communicating about these things, like, maybe a worry you have, just as the minute it comes up, let's discuss it, you know?
Yeah.
It just helps us, like, keep each other accountable so that we can actually be the parents we want to be, because we have to be intentional about that, right? We could easily just repeat the patterns we've seen. We could be enabling, is that the word?
Yeah.
I don't know, but like stereotypical sexist ass fucking ideologies that we don't really truly value, but because they're just so ingrained in us. But yeah, speaking of true love, I have been reading the book All About Love, and I took some notes that I'm like, let me just read it, because if y'all know me, that's what I like to do. So in the book, they define love as the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. And I always say that I pick books right when I need them. And Travis and I had just been having discussions about that, like, evolving of ourselves that allows us to, like, grow together into the future, right? And I'm a busybody. Travis is very chill. And I feel like sometimes I feel like there's a disconnect. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That, like, I'm go, 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 and you're like, I'm good here. So when I read that and it talked about nurturing one's own and another's growth, and I'm like, that's what I'm seeking. That, like, I'm doing me and I'm evolving, you're doing you, you're evolving, and then we're kind of just there to support each other and also, like, see each other as inspiration. Like, I'm going to keep going because he's going and I can't stay behind.
You know, we've had plenty of discussions on that topic. I guess my question to you is, there are people out there who are in a place in their lives that they probably never even thought that they would get to. And very, you know, the word content has a, sometimes comes across as negative, but they're happy with where they are in life. And maybe they could go for a promotion and make more money and get bigger and better, or they could take more trips or whatever the case is. But what do you say to that person who is happy with where they are and they're like, I'm good doing this amount. I hope that my partner is okay with this where I'm at.
I think that that leads to amicable separations, right?
Amicable.
And again, in terms of personal growth, I don't always mean like more money, a bigger house, more vacations.
But I'm saying anything. Like, you could keep going. You could be like fitness. You can.
So it depends on what it is, right? Because, someone might be just content. They don't want more. They don't want to feed into capitalism or whatever. And they rather live with less. But if your partner is on the opposite end of that and they want more, that could lead to like a hard conversation about like, this is when we stop liking each other and we're not going to force it. But I know that for me, it's more of a personal growth thing. Like, even what our listeners know, our conversation about food, it sounds so silly, but it's just like, to me, it's important that like the other grown, capable adult in the home has this life skill, you know, that's what it is to me. Right. And like, some people might say like, well, gender roles, like the woman should do this, or it's just not his thing. Like, you know, some people just aren't okay with it. It's like every human being needs to eat. It can't be not your thing. And even if it isn't your thing, we have to have like at least a basis of, you know, feeding ourselves, you know? So to me, that's something that like is important, that I see you take initiative on doing better.
Yeah.
And if you disagreed, if you were like 100% like, no, that it could become like a bigger issue.
Yeah, it definitely would be a conversation about like, how do we move forward from that if we decide to move forward together?
I don't think, see, with that, like with food, like let's say you did, like if you just said, babe, no.
I think it's also how I approach it. If I came at you on some like, I'm not cooking, do what you gotta do.
Yeah. And there's been times, honestly, that I've told you, babe, like, if that's what it is, tell me. Because I felt like sometimes you would give me false hope. Like, oh, I'm going to do better. Or you'll like cook one meal, or then you won't. So then I'm like, do you really agree? Do you really feel like you as a man, as a person, want to have improved this life skill.
Yeah.
You know, and then as a father is a different level. As a partner, I feel like it's last. But, and yeah, that's another thing. Like, we talk about doing things for our partner, but a lot of the times, if we just improve things for ourselves, our partner just benefits from it, you know, just from being around in your proximity.
I think, you know, like you said, that I incorrectly said earlier, you know, I have been cooking more in the past couple of months since Santi has been born. And, you know, it feels good, especially when I'm putting effort into like a new dish. And then I'm hearing Eli, because, you know, Eli is like my biggest cheerleader. He's like, "You made this? This is like the best meal ever." And, you know, hyping it up. He's my number one fan, so I appreciate that. But it feels good, yeah, you know. And then I could tell that when you're genuinely enjoying something I created, I'm still not all the way signed up for like cooking.
Yeah.
But I can see the benefit.
Yeah. I think you just have like imposter syndrome. And I feel like a lot of people who didn't grow up cooking, and especially if you come from backgrounds where food is so big, right? So Jamaican, and your mom could cook her ass off, right? So trying to think of like cooking to that level is like intimidating, right? I'm from New York. There's like a million Dominican restaurants, and like people know I'm Dominican and expect a certain type of food, and that could be intimidating because it's like I'm from the Bronx, and like my mom cooked a lot, but she worked a lot, and it wasn't like she was like teaching me how to cook in the kitchen. Like, I picked up things from looking here and there, and I really taught myself how to cook in adulthood, you know? I used to make like eggs and tuna and like season the chicken as I got a little older, but I wasn't really cooking until I moved out the house.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it is like that fear in your head, like that. And also telling yourself, "I don't cook, I don't cook, I don't cook," for years. You're 35 years old. It's going to take time to unlearn that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good old cooking topic.
Good. Like, but back to the main point is like that self-improvement piece.
Yeah.
And that part of the work that we do in marriage, and like a lot of it is work on ourselves. And what tends to happen is you're not the same person you were when you got married at year 5, for us at year 8. So have we both changed in a direction that allows us to still be happy together?
Yeah. Have we both changed in a direction that still aligns with one another?
Like, are we still compatible?
Yeah.
And then if the growth is all one-sided, that's going to weigh on the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about motivation, inspiration, and it's like, if you're living with someone, they should be your biggest motivator.
Yeah.
Yeah. And love has a lot of other parts too, right? In the book, it talks about affection, care, recognition, respect, commitment, trust, honesty, and communication. And I think a lot of times, all of these things we need to seek in our other relationships, not just romantic. And I think a goal for me for this year is like loving on my loved ones more.
And loved ones meaning like friends and family.
Yeah, like my chosen family for sure. People who reciprocate, people I look up to, people who inspire me. And that's another thing, like a lot of us, we enable the shitty behavior of our friends and family by just like accepting it and pretending like, okay, well, no biggie. And it's like, nah, if you are living in a way that doesn't align with my values, like, I'm gonna distance myself, and that's it.
On the topic of like pouring into people who pour into you, I got a text message from someone. I didn't tell you I was gonna read this, but someone who I speak to every once in a while, but every time I speak to them, they're a talker.
Mm.
And I gotta like really get my social meter all the way up before mm-hmm. I speak to them, because it could be mm-hmm. a little draining. But they sent me a message today, and it was kind of out of nowhere. But yeah, I'll just read it without giving away too much. They said, other than being Blank's friend and a sneakerhead, what really made you interesting was the way you and your wife looked at one another. The way she looked at you, you reminded me of me and my wife, and vice versa. I've only done a few things right in my life. Choosing and being chosen by my wife was the first. We've been together for 27 years, married for 23 in May, and forever in love, I pray.
That is beautiful.
He said something else, and then he says, yeah, I won't say anything else.
Give it away. Yeah, yeah. That's beautiful.
So yeah, I thought that was, a day before our 8th anniversary.
Yeah.
It was pretty affirming.
And I think it's so important for me, just as a woman, and I guess a part of this marriage is like, I want to keep that alive forever. Like, I want people to know that we like each other. You know what I mean? Like, when we're in our presence, and even just yesterday, or was that earlier today, like, we hugged each other on the couch, and Eli was like, let me get in that hug. I want to join that hug. And it's like, we're just affectionate no matter who's around, no matter where we are. And I want always to have that.
Yeah.
Like, when that starts to, if that stops happening, we need to check in.
Yeah. And I think what makes us so strong is that even those moments don't last long. Those moments of not doing that,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because it feels unnatural.
Yeah, we'll be like, whoa, what's going on? It's like,
oh. And, obviously if something serious is happening, we address it.
Yeah.
Like Steph likes to say, we're trying our best not to live in delusion.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the theme of going into year 9 is like, being really grounded in reality.
Yeah.
And
accountability. Avoiding self-sabotage.
Yeah. Even though I do want to watch an episode of TV after this.
Balance. We got to have balance.
I do want to talk about our new addition, Santi.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to, we could talk about a little bit about your birth story.
All right.
I'll say it from my point, and then you kind of could hop in. So, yeah, I feel like you had a really great pregnancy in terms of like how you were feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You were active. You were rarely sick.
Yeah.
Maybe some car nausea.
Yeah, I've suffered from migraines since I was like 15, 16 years old, and when I first got pregnant with Eli, they were like, you can't take Advil, only Tylenol. And I remember like being so heartbroken because Advil was like the only thing that works. And I dealt with migraines during that pregnancy, and Tylenol wouldn't take them away. With River, same, I would get migraines. I felt like Tylenol felt like it might have been working better, but it was still like they sucked, and I was still getting migraines often. And with Santi's pregnancy, I like almost never had a migraine.
Do you think you're more tired with this pregnancy?
Like, just like sleepy, exhausted? Yeah. I'm not sure.
I feel like we had more sex with River.
Well, that's not tiredness. That was just my sex drive was different.
Mm-hmm. You're like, I just didn't want to.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't blame it on exhaustion. I would just blame it on like, I don't know, something. Like my hormones, it was just different.
Yeah.
It was different. Maybe it could be having a toddler, homeschooling.
True.
My mind is different. We were also living here, and the commute for you. I don't know. I felt like everything was just different.
Yeah.
Like our nighttime routine is just different.
Yeah. You're right. That commuting to work Because it's like,
all right. You have to get up really early. You got home later.
Yeah. But, yeah, so.
That added to it. But at the end of the day, I think it's sex drive. Because when you want to, you don't give a shit about none of that.
That's true. Because you could, like, you'd be like, babe, you want to? I'm back. Damn, I gotta be up in an hour. Fuck it.
Fuck it. Literally.
So I think coming up to our due date, we had like our last appointment.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the appointment and they were basically saying that you're not really ready, but if there's no action by this date,
yeah, you're gonna set up a date for my induction.
And we came home.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was in the kitchen and all of a sudden I hear, my water broke.
Yeah, so I literally left my appointment. They were like, yeah, you're not dilating. Nothing's happening yet. See you next week. I was in the car. I had two contractions, but I was having the same contractions for several weeks, kind of like randomly. And they would happen in the car often, like I think just from sitting in the car. So I didn't think anything of it. And with both of my previous pregnancies, my water never broke, like in the house. Like they would break it at the hospital. So that was just like an experience. And I think you thought I was lying at first. You were like,
are you serious?
Are you serious?
I pulled out my phone and started recording. It was pretty cool. I'm happy that we experienced it.
Yeah, me too.
Especially with breaking news. This is probably going to be our last baby.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, nice to get the full experience.
Yeah. It's not like the movies.
It's not like the movies. So, you know, we're thinking it's go time. We're making phone calls to her mom. The plan was always that Steph's mom was going to come here, hold down our boys while we go give birth. And we called her mom, like, whatever you're doing, get over here
now. Drop it and go.
Then after that, we get on the phone with the nurse, and they basically said, "What if the contractions are like 10 minutes apart, then come in.
Then but come in. For or now, if the water looked like bloody at all or any strange color, but it was clear, it was perfectly fine. And my contractions were like so irregular, like.
But she's like, but just chill.
Just chill at home. But so, we didn't think it'd be all night.
So her mom gets over and her mom's like, you gonna cook?
Yeah, I cooked dinner.
Steph cooked dinner. I think we showered. Mm-hmm. We made sure everything was good in the bag. And we slept.
We went to sleep.
And woke up. We had a decent night's sleep, like 6-7 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Woke up the next morning. And then I think... then your doctor was like, come in around, you know, come
just
in as soon
come
as possible.
In, yeah, just come in.
But not like urgent. It was just like, you know, get here.
Yes.
So we got to the hospital around 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll let you take over from there.
So, yeah, from there, I was just excited because I'm like, I'm having contractions, but they're not that consistent. I'm like nervous. I'm like, I don't want Pitocin. My water's been broken for like, you know, over 12 hours. So I know they're going to want me to labor soon. But when they checked my dilation, I was already 6 centimeters. So I was so excited because I'm like, I dilated to 6 centimeters with contractions that were manageable. Like, I'm excited because I was having contractions. They just weren't consistent. So I was like, I could do this. I could have no epidural. Like my last pregnancy, I could do it all natural, whatever. I don't know why I was thinking that, but for some reason I got it in my head that like that's how I wanted to do it. Then they checked me again. Then like around 1 o'clock, so I was there from like 10:30, 11. Around 1 o'clock, they're like, "Yeah, we want to give you Pitocin to just speed things up.
Just a little Pitocin. It's just a smidge." It's
kinda... And if you don't know, Pitocin is basically like a drug that's made to induce contractions, right? So like you're having contractions, but they're not coming, you know, consistent enough. And we want to move you along because if it's been 24 hours since your water broke, there's a risk of infection and we don't want the baby to go in ICU, in the NICU. And I instantly am just in tears because I'm like, this isn't what I had in mind. Like I wanted to just labor naturally, no epidural. If I get Pitocin, I'm not going to be able to handle those contractions. Like people have said they've compared contractions from Pitocin to like a jackhammer in your back. And it's like, I'm not doing that. And then also, I was a bit unprepared. Like, I wish I had done research about like what happens after your water breaks. How many hours later is it a concern if you haven't fully dilated? And I felt since I was unprepared, I had to just go based on what the doctor was saying. And then it's like, you know, being a Black woman in healthcare and just feeling like they were just rushing me. Not that it was actually what was medically necessary, was just like a lot in the moment. But then I was like, you know what? I had two epidurals before. Fuck it. I'm going to just get the epidural, get the Pitocin. There's nothing I could do. I don't want to not do it. And then Santi has to go to the NICU.
Yeah.
So then what happened once I got the epidural?
So she got the epidural. The process of getting the epidural was pretty smooth. I didn't see any problems there.
Mm-hmm.
But then shortly after, she was kind of like loopy.
Yeah. And I've had two epidurals before. This never happened.
And just very emotional and concerned, and made me concerned.
Yeah.
It made me concerned because I know that she was crying a lot. You were crying a lot. And what made me concerned is that, like, if she can't get it together emotionally, she's not going to be able to push the baby out. Mm-hmm. And if she can't push the baby out, I feel like they're going to jump to a C-section. Mm-hmm. Just because.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if her fears are right, and let's say I allowed myself to like feed into the narrative of they not listening to this Black woman.
Yeah.
The next logical thing for your brain to go to is they're going to want to cut her as quick as possible just to get this baby out and move on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching you like freak out.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word. And
one, I was freaking out because I felt like I was being rushed. But two, because I felt like the for whatever reason, the epidural got me like high. Like I felt loopy, like drowsy. And like, it just felt the weirdest thing I ever felt.
So, yeah, she's being very emotional.
And on top of that, what was going on with my leg?
It was like, what's the word?
Numb.
It wasn't coming to me.
So basically, epidural numbs you from the waist down. That's the point. So you don't feel contractions. For whatever reason, it numbed my left side way more than my right side. So I was feeling contractions still on the right side. And then my left side was so numb, it felt like my leg was in a block of ice. Like that numb, like I couldn't move it at all by myself. Like Travis or the doctor had to physically move my leg for me. But to the point that it was uncomfortable, on top of me feeling loopy, it was just like, it felt like torture. I had to get the epidural readjusted, but it literally did nothing. It still felt the same. On top of feeling loopy, on top of feeling like this is not the birth plan that I wanted. So I was just crying for like the next 3 hours.
Yeah. And I was in a panic. Well, internal panic.
No, you did good. In hindsight, you did good. Because I know that I was just probably insufferable and you didn't make me feel like it.
Yeah.
You just kept telling me, you got this, like, or don't let your mind go there. And I remember I kept saying, it's not my mind, it's my body. Like, it's not mental. It's like physically, my leg is so numb. Like, what the hell? I was so mad.
Yeah, it was a little scary. Like I said, where my mind was going.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, they're just like, we're going to start pushing.
Yeah.
And I'm still nervous because I think like your first try at pushing, like nothing really happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, they're going to fucking cut her.
You know what helped me a little bit when I was pushing? I threw up. And I think once I threw up, it helped with like the loopiness. And I felt like a little bit more with it to like push that baby out.
Yeah. But her first attempt, I was still nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And let me clarify. Anyone who's ever had a baby knows that the plan is you want to have a vaginal birth.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have a vaginal birth, no tearing, no cutting of the vaginal area. Like, you just want to walk out of there basically unscathed because it makes the healing process a lot better.
Yeah.
Not only physically, but mentally. Mm-hmm. And that's where my mind was. I've seen you with postpartum. Mm-hmm. I know how that can go, but adding the physical to that.
And then with River, I had such an easy labor too.
I just didn't want you to deal with that. And, you know, a little selfishly, I didn't want to deal with that. Like, I didn't, not saying I wouldn't.
Yeah.
But I just would prefer that we walked out of there unscathed.
Yeah.
So that's where my mind, when I keep saying, like, I just didn't want her to get cut, that's where my mind was going. Mm-hmm. So they start pushing the first attempt. I'm just like, fuck. In my mind, I'm like, fuck, this is not good. But also still trying to be supportive. Like she said, she threw up. They tried again. And I saw, like, I'm going to get a little detailed here. Mm-hmm. But seeing your vagina open up a little, oh, I'm just, that's too detailed?
No, look, I just didn't know what you were going to say.
It gave me hope.
What helped was that nurse that said, do you want a mirror? That literally was like the best call ever. I was like, yes, give me a mirror. So I was able to see my own vagina. That helped.
Got the mirror.
Yeah.
And that definitely was a game changer.
Yeah. Like, it just helped me mentally do what I had to do. Like, I was actually able to see what I was doing. Because with the epidural and one side being so numb, like, I couldn't really feel what I was doing. So being able to see it was just like, boom, I know what I'm doing. I know what the goal is.
So I think, like, on the third set of pushes, like, that's when the magic happened.
Yeah.
And happy to report, you know, it was a vaginal delivery, no tearing.
Yeah. Oh, we forgot about the one part where I thought my organs were failing or something.
Oh, yeah. So the way Santi was positioned, she was like basically like her legs were...
Like she like stretched out and was pushing on the left side of my like rib cage.
I can't breathe.
Yeah, I literally couldn't breathe and it felt like something was swelling and like gonna explode inside of me. That's what I thought. I'm like, it hurts. They're like, she's probably there. I'm like, how is she up there if she's trying to come out? And when you push, you have to take a deep breath and then push. She was pushing so hard there that I couldn't take a deep breath. Like, I'm like, I can't. I was taking little gasps of air and then pushing. Thought I was gonna pass out, but that was it. And literally, once she came out, it's like everything kind of stopped hurting. Everything felt normal. It was like, okay, this was all worth it.
Yeah. So, you know, I always remember with River, Steph was like, make sure you're paying attention to what they're doing with River, but also pay attention to me. So, like, I remember I backed myself into a corner of the room to, like, I'm, like, looking at Santi and on her, and I'm, like, peeking over. But, yeah, it was, you know, it was an experience, to say the least. But, you know, I'm glad that you both made it out. You're both healthy. Our stay in the room was a lot better than it was with River.
Yeah,
it was just outside of that experience, I feel like I was pretty happy with where we gave birth and stuff.
Yeah. Everybody, all the nurses were really nice. And if I could say anything to people, it's just be prepared. Like, if you're pregnant, even if you've had multiple kids, like, you never know. Each pregnancy, each labor could be different. Like, I really wish I knew about, like, the hours after your water breaks. Like, when should you be concerned? Like, when the doctor told me at hour 20, you should start getting Pitocin because the risk of infection. I wish I knew, like, what the risk of infection was at hour 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Like, and maybe I could have made a choice to, like, wait a little bit longer. But not having that knowledge, I couldn't really advocate for myself in that moment. Yeah.
And I'll say, if you don't have kids right now, don't let this make you afraid of having kids. I just feel like every labor is different. Every story is different. The only, you know, obviously I've never held a baby or given birth, but I feel like watching stuff, the advice I've given to every new mother, I always say, stay active and keep having sex.
Oh, yeah, that's beneficial for you. No, I'm kidding.
I think it's important. I think exercise and still being intimate with your partner helps. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm just basing it off you and your body, and we're 3 for 3.
Yeah.
So, wrapping up?
Yeah, we're wrapping up. We're not talking about Love is Blind. We talk too much.
Yeah. I do want to say one thing.
Okay.
I'm going to post a reel tomorrow. It'll be out by the time this episode's out.
Mm-hmm.
It was inspired by a Drake lyric.
Mm-hmm.
When the song came out, I can't remember how many years ago it was. I remember when that, listening to that lyric, and you know, like with any Drake lyric, you're just like, whatever, it rhymes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm not taking it to heart.
Yeah.
But this one, I don't know, it stuck with me then, and I'm happy that it popped back into my head now, because it's something I didn't know what I wanted to do with that. I don't think I was inspired to do.
What's the lyric, babe? Sorry, I love you.
I think the song is called Child's Play, and in the song he goes, married in our 20s, now where's the fun in that?
Okay.
And it's basically him saying, like, why the hell would I get married in my 20s? Like, I'm out here fucking these hoes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I remember when I heard it, I'm just like, damn, I wish I got married sooner. Like, I wish my whole 20s was consumed by my marriage. I wish I met my partner sooner. And, you know, to have my favorite rapper basically like, man, you're a clown if you you let someone take over your 20s. And,
yeah. And we were in our 20s when we got married.
We were in our 20s. And, you know, it's the best decision I've ever made.
Yeah.
It's a decision I wish I was able to have made sooner. You know, obviously, life happened the way it was meant to be.
Exactly.
We have a beautiful 10-year-old because life happened the way it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just want to say happy anniversary.
Thank you, baby.
I love you. I love you so much. I know this thing called life isn't always the easiest, and curveballs come. But I'm happy. I'm ecstatic that I get to do it with you, because it makes those moments worth it. You know, to say you're my best friend, I feel like that word just doesn't even, I need a better word than best friend for what you are for me. You're my everything.
Yeah.
So I could go on and on. I love you. I like you. Happy anniversary.
Thank you, baby.
Yeah.
I love you and I like you more. You know, these couple of years, growing our family, it's put a lot of strain on the normalcy, I guess, that we had. And it's just showing me that, like, ain't shit gonna stop us, you know? Thank you for being patient with me as, like, I make all these changes. And I know that you're probably very content in a lot of ways. And maybe my brain is, like, seems like it's on overdrive. But you literally never make me feel like I'm too much. You never make me feel like I'm not worthy of being loved or I'm too difficult to love. And I know sometimes I even kind of ask you, like, are you sure you want this? Are you good? Do you like? And you literally genuinely never make me feel that way. And for many years, I always thought I was unlovable. So thank you. Happy anniversary, babe.
Happy anniversary. Peace, y'all. Till next time, whenever that may be.
Peace.